Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
One year ago today, the awful attack at Parkland took place. Outstanding guest on that at 1:35. Dara at 2:35. Adam Carter, what is the television show the two of us have discussed the most on the radio?
Three's Company.
Come and knock at my door. Yeah, that's... I don't know if it's Breaking Bad or not, but it's Breaking Bad, right?
Oh, I was going to say Curb. Your
I think it's Curb. You're right. I think Curb is number one. My oldest and I were going over various Curb stories last night because we were debating again, like we did. How are they going to handle the Funk Man's passing? And they got to have humor with it, right?
Oh, of course.
They can't. I mean, they just, you know, with Bob Einstein passing and so essential to Curb the last, I don't know how many years, but they got to have some fun with it. Well, Breaking Bad, it's pretty much a done deal that Aaron Paul is reprising his role in Vince Gilligan's upcoming Breaking Bad sequel film. It's going to be on Netflix and AMC. And the idea is that Jesse Pinkman, right, was able to flee Uncle Jack and the white supremacists. You know, after Walt stuck him there, and then Walt came back and saved the day, and he drives through the gate. And in theory, Walt is bleeding out, right? Cops are coming. So we're left to assume that Walt has died. We don't know that for certain. But the premise seems to be, from good reporting, including Hollywood Reporter, that it's going to feature Jesse. What has happened to his life? How is he handling? What, I mean, was he caught by the cops? Did he end up going to prison? What is his life like now after he's watched so many people get killed? He found out what Walt did to him. What a screw-up he can be. Cranston's already on the record saying he would love to be a part of it. Now, does that mean he's just going to be a part of it in flashbacks? Does that mean he's a part of it in Jesse's mind? Does that mean he's a part of it alive? It's one of my five favorite shows ever, Breaking Bad. How often does it happen, though, where a television show has a great run of some length, and then the demand is out there through the public, through the critics, and they make a movie after the run? Can you think of many where they've done that? I mean, MASH was a movie and they turned into a TV show. But I'm saying it was such a good television show, the public wanted more, so that the brains behind it said, yeah, how about we'll do it and we'll do a 2-hour movie?
No. Nostalgic wise, we had the run of nostalgic movies that were just awful comedies, like Dukes of Hazzard comes to mind. But you always get rumors of, you know, the big shows, Sopranos movie. There's talk even recently now, I think it's actually being filmed, the Deadwood movie, which I love Deadwood.
Yeah, I didn't see it a lot.
I think it was three seasons, and then they pulled the plug on it. And I think they actually are filming a Deadwood movie. But yeah, it's just usually in the immediate aftermath of when a great show ends, you know. Ooh, what's next? What will we find out?
Right. And
the Sopranos movies will go, too, right? With his kid is playing a young Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
Gandolfini's kid.
It's a prequel. And in theory, what David Simon has shared, I think, is he's not as much as a part of it as, like, Christopher's dad is a huge part. So that's set like 30 years before. This is literally Jesse now. Would they have parts of Walt's family? Would they have, was it Stinky Pete? Was that the other, some of the goofballs that were that?
Badger and.
Badger, right? And again, okay, so does Bob Odenkirk show up? Because it's so weird because we're going to have a Breaking Bad movie. Then we still have, you know, Saul and that great show, but that's set up. In theory, what, 5-6 years before all this? Or maybe it's even not 5-6 years. And how about how they bring it all together? Now, yeah, people are coming in. Star Trek. Star Trek was different, though, in the sense of...
Skinny Pete. It was
skinny,
not Stinky Pete.
Well, then I was thinking Sneaky Pete. I'm like, yeah, I know we go to Sneaky Pete's all the time. It's Skinny Pete? I knew it was something like that. Star Trek was... You know, the great show was in the 60s. Then we had the next version. But then the movies were about Kirk again. Right? So that was a long break. This is 5-6 years later. Mission Impossible. That's 25 years from the first one. Somebody's saying this is a better match. Duchovny and Gillian Anderson.
X-Files.
And X-Files was only 5-6 years later, right? And those movies were okay. The difference is, too, is, Skinny Pete, people are saying. Yeah, maybe, you know, in the movie.
Stinky Pete.
He should be Stinky Pete. I think that's a better character. The difference here is this is also, they're saying with AMC and Netflix. Now, they're probably so loyal to AMC because the numbers were never enormous. It caught on pretty quickly with the critics, and the public started coming around to a certain point. If this was a mainstream movie, what does your gut tell you about it? If this was like in the theaters compared to...
No, it's a online movie.
Yeah, it's more just niche. Sex in the City. Okay, Lindsay, now, the first Sex in the City. So, okay, turn in my man card. Here it is. I'm giving it to you. I enjoyed Sex
I liked
in the
Sex
City.
In the City as well.
I did. I thought the first movie was good. I enjoyed it. I saw parts of the second one and thought it was an atrocity. I thought it was just so...
Is that the one where they're in...
They're in the desert somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Lindsay, where are they in this second?
Morocco.
Abu Dhabi.
And then the third one hasn't happened, right?
I don't know if the third one's actually happening.
Right. Well, the idea is it's Kim Cattrall... She's not in the group, and then the rumors are she wants too much money, and then she's pushing back at it. So as someone who once watched, what did you literally watch one weekend? Didn't you watch Double Figures to get caught up?
I think it was 8 episodes.
Was that a day or was that a
in
weekend?
One day, I believe.
One day. Yeah. And we were worried about, what did David Bloom die of? The Edina, a native who was a very good reporter for NBC.
Like an aneurysm.
Like a blood clotting by sitting so long. We're worried about you having blood clotting issues. So you loved Breaking Bad. You've said that before. Are you looking forward to this or are you kind of eh?
Kind of eh.
I'm looking forward to it. I think Vince Gilligan is that good that he'll pull it off. I'll probably overhype it and won't live up to the expectations. Because I mentioned this the other day. I saw Bohemian Rhapsody. Okay. Expecting it to be terrible. And I actually thought it was fine. Yeah. And he's amazing, right? It's like you, Star is Born. When you saw Star is Born, everybody was telling you it was the greatest movie ever. And you went, eh.
Well, it wasn't eh. I mean, it was a good, very good
right.
movie.
Yeah. But the expectations game can influence all of us. Adam has an update right now. Now let's get into the story about Andrew McCabe and legit or not. And even if it's not, it's a rather earth-rattling story. That's in moments.
I fall off my chair and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with
okay,
you.
So Andrew McCabe is in the news today. Let's just review who he is. McCabe was with the FBI for 21 years, and he rose to the number two position in the FBI 2016. He's relevant to the 2016 election for a couple reasons, and he oversaw two of the most charged cases, what was going on with Hillary Clinton and the private email server, and eventually the Trump campaign, and if there was anything involving the Russian government. Excuse me. Cookies. McCabe eventually was fired, and he was accused of leaking information, not about Donald Trump. He was accused about leaking information about Hillary Clinton, and it wasn't favorable to Hillary Clinton. Let's be clear about it. His actual firing was, now he contends it was okay, it was standard practice when he was giving info to reporters, but it was about Clinton and information which was not favorable. The president became obsessed with McCabe because he thinks the FBI is out to get him, including Comey, who he fired. And then he's now obsessed with the fact that McCabe's wife ran for a seat in Virginia and received thousands of dollars from a political ally of Hillary Clinton, right? Of course, McCabe, just a minor point, he's a registered Republican and said he did not vote in the 2016 race, okay? So then we get to today, because today it breaks that he's got his book coming out, The Threat, How the FBI Protects America in the Age of Terror and Trump. And he sits down with Scott Pelley. We were talking off air. Scott Pelley is now underutilized by CBS. I don't get it. We would joke about, like, you know, the tight suits and stuff. The guy's really, really good.
Really good and, like, I mean, textbook.
He fits.
Anchorman. just the gravitas, everything. But maybe I was just thinking about it, too. Is he too old now? I mean, Jeff Glor obviously is a very younger man.
Let's Lindsay look it up, and then let's the two of us guess. Scott Pelley, I'm going to say late 50s. Jeff Glor, early to mid 50s. I mean, are you?
Oh, really? I say Jeff Glor is. I thought Jeff Glor is my age. 32, 33.
I meant to say early to mid 40s.
Oh yeah.
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 Okay. Are you really done? Well, how old is Lester? Lester's got to be in.
No, I'm not saying that he's done at all. I'm just saying
they wanted their eye candy to match.
Trying to get a younger.
Yeah. I think it'd be sad if it was just solely in that. How accurate are we?
Scott Pelley is 61.
Okay.
Jeff Glor is 43.
Okay. Well, maybe played a part. So Pelley, and by the way, when people were working exclusively for 60 Minutes, many of them were absolutely brilliant. I'm just saying he was so good also on CBS Evening News. So McCabe sits down with Scott Pelley and says that after the firing of Comey, the Bureau's director again, that they discuss whether to recruit cabinet members to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove the president from the office. Take that in. When Comey's fired, top people in the FBI are now thinking about, can we get enough cabinet members to get Donald Trump out? To do a, I don't know, let's be blunt, Adam, a political hit on the president. McCabe said he spoke to Trump just after Comey was fired, and the next day he met with a team investigating the interference. I was very concerned that I was able to put the Russia case on absolutely solid ground in an indelible fashion. That if I remove click quickly or reassign or fire, the case could not be closed or vanish. Pelley, in this conversation, when he's talking to CBS about it, there were meetings of the Justice Department, which it was discussed whether the vice president of the majority cabinet could be brought together to remove the president of the U.S. under the 25th Amendment. These were the 8 days from Comey's firing to the point where Robert Mueller was appointed, again by Rod Rosenstein. And the highest levels of American law enforcement were trying to figure out what to do with the president. That's about as stunning as it gets. And we've had these reports before, including whether Rosenstein was willing to wear a wire. He claims, and some others claim, that he was joking. Like, what do you want me to do, wear a wire? McCabe is like, no, he was not joking at all. Okay? McCabe is the first person who actually was in the meetings with the top people who was willing to go on the record about what was said. Let's react to this. If you want to just fall to your defaults, that's where we are in this country. I think it's a mistake. I think it's, you know, if you love the president, no matter what, anything that's done against him is just atrocious. If you hate him, anything that's done that could harm him or take him out or implicates him in Russia, you believe it 100%. Not one time in the show I've ever said there's absolute collusion by the president. Also, let's be clear, there's not one time in the show I've ever said there's no collusion, even though the president says it endlessly. And even though, as we pointed out the other day, Richard Burr, well-respected Republican, heading the Senate Intelligence Committee, said, at this time, I don't see any collusion. The president, as is his wont, stretched the truth a great deal and said, the Senate Intelligence Committee has said there's no collusion. No. And MSNBC, of all people, also backed up the president a little bit on this, more than a little bit, actually, when they said there are Democrats who feel the same way, but the entire report is not done. When you take this entire thing in, this is staggering. This just doesn't happen. Where the guy who now is the de facto head of the FBI is so worried, he's starting to count numbers about getting the president out of the White House because he might be an agent for Russia and he could harm the country. Your reaction when you hear this is what? 24 past one. I'll chime in more. Get Adam's thoughts when we come back. 651-989-9226 or text away 81807. If you're asking me, do I believe that everybody in the FBI was out to get Donald Trump? I don't for a second. Peter Strzok and what was going on. Comments back and forth with the woman he was having an affair with, who also worked in the FBI. I don't think he should have been involved in any FBI investigation. I don't think in any way. Now, let's not forget how they exonerated him in the investigation and whether his private comments affected him publicly. But he shouldn't have been involved. But when the president turns this into, they're all out to get me, don't believe it for a second. I don't think at any point they just decided that Federal Bureau of Investigation decided we've got to bring down Donald Trump. Don't. You can say you don't think they handled things well. There are questions raised, but the picking and choosing of what is out there at times by both sides, but in this particular case, by the president and his allies, is laughable. Because I heard it over and over again today from the conservatives. Hey, what kind of credibility does this guy have? He was fired. Yeah, for giving background info to reporters on damaging information about, of all people, Hillary Rodham Clinton. Okay, not exactly bashing Trump. Now, the Justice Department has come out as I'm grabbing it right here, and they're pushing back strongly at what McCabe has to say. Here's what they say. The Deputy Attorney General again rejects Mr. McCabe's depiction of events as inaccurate and factually incorrect. The Deputy Attorney General never authorized any recording that Mr. McCabe references. There is no basis to invoke the 25th Amendment, nor was the Deputy Attorney General in a position to consider invoking the 25th Amendment. Finally, the Deputy Attorney General never spoke to Mr. Comey about appointing a special counsel. The deputy attorney general, in fact, appointed special counsel Mueller and directed that Mr. McCabe be removed from any participation in the investigation. There's plenty of credibility around the deputy attorney general. So am I 1,000% convinced what happened here? Nope, I'm not. But the nonsense to me that the whole swamp was waiting to take down the president, don't accept it at all. There are many things that happen during the campaign and from the reporting so far, which has raised a lot of red flags about a lot of people who are tied to the Trump campaign, but we don't know how far it goes up to the president himself. To act like Mueller hasn't achieved anything is ludicrous. Look what's happened with Manafort. Look what's happened with Cohen. Look what's happened with Carter Page. Look what's happening with Roger Stone. These are some of the most essential people, at least a few of those, in Stone, Manafort, Cohen, Michael Flynn. These are enormously essential people. Now, is there anything, again, on the Trump Tower meeting? Because we made this point a couple weeks ago where the phone calls were now reported that they weren't from Don Jr. to the president. And I'll accept that reporting 100%. But again, I'm still saying not one shred of doubt do I have that Donald Trump, in my opinion, that Donald Trump Sr. knew that Donald Trump Jr. and Manafort and Kushner were meeting with someone who said they had damaging information from Hillary about Hillary Clinton. Because all of a sudden, out of nowhere, that same day, he comes out and says, just wait, something's coming out. And guess what? Nothing ever came out. He sure was tied to that meeting. Adam, just quickly before I read some text, when you take all this in right now, outside of the fact that it's, I don't know how you fathom that this is where our country's at right now, that whether, let's go with the premise that's not true, that we have somebody who's the number two FBI guy, who had been viewed as a partisan in any way, would be stretching the truth or making this up, or the other side, that there were many people at high levels who were so concerned about the present president that they're wondering who they could get to vote yes about removing him.
Well, it's stunning either way, no matter what. I mean, either one of those scenarios is stunning, and sadly, it's not like, boy, we're looking back in history and saying, whoa, that was a crazy point in history. It's still playing itself out, and I mean, this is just like I say all the time. I mean, things that happen almost weekly on a weekly news cycle basis, if not daily, sometimes more than once a day, things that come out and hit the news cycle that, 5 years ago, heck, 2 years ago, would have dominated a news cycle for months.
Yeah.
Suddenly it's there'll be something new tomorrow.
Among the texts here, let's face it, Trump isn't the brightest president we've ever had. My guess is AIDS. I had to tell him what collusion meant. No attention to ban. He likes the trappings, but not smart enough to plan anything. That's one of the comebacks people said, too, who are detached from it now, but are not a part of the administration now, but still have great admiration of the president. They'll say, we weren't organized at all. To think that we could pull this off is lunacy. Another text, Washington is predominantly composed of liberals because liberals tend to expand the government. There are Republicans all over the government. And by the way, right now, they're filled with Republicans because the president is in control of the White House. The Senate is controlled by Republicans. And by the way, the previous 2 years, to act like Republicans don't stick around and aren't a part of government is false. It's just not true. Another text. McCabe is a joke, a liar, and should be arrested like Stone. I wish he would have been removed. Trump and his cabinet have damaged virtually every department of the government. More text here. Just read them all here. The move by the FBI shows how serious men and women saw how dangerous Trump was and could be. I'm worried about how close we have come as a country to a total meltdown. Not sure we'll know until Trump has left office. I love how you try to please everyone. We both know that Trump is guilty of everything. I'm not trying to please everyone. I'm saying what I know and don't know, and I'm not afraid to praise or criticize both sides of the aisle. Talk me through McCabe's logic. His boss gets fired, immediately assumes Trump is colluding with Russia. No, this investigated The investigation was going on well before that. But then after what Comey had been saying and that what he then said, the president, to McCabe, that's when McCabe brought it to an even higher level. Let's pause right here. A year ago today, about at this time, the events in Parkland were unfolding. Nick Cruz killing so many kids, harming so many people. An excellent guest on this topic comes up in moments. Another great guest on the topic tomorrow. We're back with traffic and weather in moments. Dr. Linda DeGutis is with us. She has led a very successful career in the areas that work for us on this particular topic. Doctor, thank you so much for coming on. What would be the major points you'd want people to know about your career? Because if we went through all of your accomplishments, I think we might be here until 2, and that is a testament to your success. And also, I thank Lindsay for tracking down. What are the main points people should know about your background as we begin this conversation?
Sure. Well, thank you. That I've worked on trauma care, emergency care, as a clinician, but then I've also really worked to look at ways of preventing things that will kill people through my work at the CDC, through my work as a researcher when I was at Yale, and really, really working to figure out what can we do to keep people from dying from injuries and violence. So that's probably the
best way to describe it. How would you describe the last year? Once we move past the horror of Parkland, and sadly, a lot of people didn't move past that. They lost their lives. Families would never see their sons or daughters again, or injuries. But as a country, when we're talking about what has been different over the next 364 days, tell us that part of the story.
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, the kids who did survive Parkland and went through that horrible event and saw what was happening to their friends and some of them to their siblings, they've really been active and they've really been working to try and get us to do something as a country to prevent people from dying of, being shot and being, or being disabled because of their injuries and because of being shot. But we still, on a daily basis, see 100 people on average dying from firearm violence, some type of it, whether it's homicide, whether it's suicide, whether it's children who pick up a gun that's loaded and they're curious naturally, and they pick up a gun and shoot another child or someone else who's nearby. So we haven't stopped it. Despite the dialogue that's gone on, and there's been quite a lot of discussion going on, and I think, again, a number of the kids from Parkland really worked to get the word out there to say, hey, we need help, we need to make this change, we need to not have this happen again in our schools or in our communities. So I think we're starting to see that, but then last week, there was a hearing on a bill in the House of Representatives to require background checks, universal background checks. And the conversation started out with, people really wanted to talk about doing that, but then it kind of got diverted and it didn't really go anywhere at that point in time. So, again, we have from our leaders on a federal level, no action to make this different, and I think the real action that we're all asking for is, even given that we have guns in our environment, much as we have cars in our environment, how do we keep people safe? How do we keep them from being killed and injured? That's really the question. And what kinds of things can we do to really make people as safe as possible?
What are your thoughts on, after Parkland in the area, the recommendations from the district, the recommendations for people who are in positions of authority about what should change, whether it's on the mental health side, whether it's on tracking down individuals as much as they can to prevent something like this taking place, changes at the school What's your view on what is taking place in the area itself?
Well, I think the first thing is that I know there were recommendations made about potentially having teachers carry firearms or others in the school carry firearms. And first of all, we have no evidence that that would be effective. And actually, those firearms would then be accessible to people who maybe shouldn't have access to them. I'm not talking about the teachers necessarily, but somebody might take one from a teacher. You would be asking teachers to shoot people if there was somebody who came in. It's not clear every teacher would feel very comfortable doing that. That's not their, it's not their role. It's not what they're used to doing.
Would you give latitude to the school districts who feel like they want to do this? A lot of them, Doctor, have said lately, maybe we've just learned about it more lately, maybe I just have learned about it more lately, that they will say, we're in a more rural part of our state. We don't have police as close to us as some others. By the time some authorities get to us, it's a significantly longer period of time than others who are near major cities. Is that a valid point?
Yeah. I don't think so, because I think that, again, is, you know, closing the barn door after the animals have escaped on some level. It's that analogy. You know, it's how do we prevent it from even happening in the first place? How do we keep someone who maybe should not be carrying a gun from bringing one to a school or bringing one into a school? How do we deal with those kinds of issues? And I think what can happen if, you know, there's a broad initiative to have guns, you know, teachers carry guns or someone in the school carry a gun, it will divert the attention from actually preventing someone who shouldn't have a gun from bringing one into the school. And I think that's where some of the problems are, is that, you know, this would just be, it would be a diversion and people would feel like they did something, but there would be no guarantee that that would work.
So considering the divide we have, Doctor, the divide among those in the medical community, the divide with our citizens, the divide with politicians, why should we feel like there will be any significant change on something changing regarding legislation, whether it's for mental health or greater gun restrictions, that both sides, maybe for principled reasons and maybe for shrill reasons, are just locked in? And they're not going to move. Why do we just feel like we're just in a position where it's just going to be rinse and repeat? And in the next month or two, you're going to be where you are. I'm going to be where I am. And something awful again is going to happen at a school.
Right. I think that, first of all, I think that I think we can do something. I think there's lots of options for doing things on many levels. And I think the first thing we have to do is get everyone to not so much stand across from each other and, you know, yell back and forth or have a fight about it, but to see what we can agree on. And if we can agree that none of us really want, you know, these kinds of shootings at the schools or people to die from gun violence, whether it's in a community, in a rural area, no matter where it is, if we can come to that agreement, then I think we can actually talk and have a discussion about what kinds of things can we do to get there, much as we did with cars.
Yep.
You know, where we've done so much with protective devices. We've done things with cars being changed somewhat in design so that certain things won't injure you the way they did 30 years ago. So I think those are the kinds of discussions and the kind of dialogue that we have to have, but we have to get everybody to sit down and have that discussion.
Dr. Linda DeGutis is with us. She's been involved in this fight for a long, long time, including with the CDC. Her basic premise is just to, in whatever way possible, to try to prevent more violence, especially towards younger individuals in our society. Is there an idea or two that you look at for folks who are trying to stop this outside of the gun idea, which we talk about schools, where you think it comes from the heart, it comes from the right intent, but really if we do this, practically, it's not going to live up to the expectation that many people have for it.
Right. Right. And I think that's true. I think the idea of universal registration, so we know who owns the guns, working with the gun manufacturers to do things so that guns can't be fired, perhaps by someone other than the owner. You know, that technology is available. Working with people who sell guns in the gun shops, and this is going on in Colorado right now, to have them understand what might indicate that somebody is buying a gun because they're going to use it to die by suicide or something, you know, so that they can help intervene on that side that somebody maybe needs some help, you know, with their mental health. So, you know, these are things that all might help. The problem's not going to go away in a day, but as, again, you know, just thinking back to what we did with cars, we gradually changed things, and we have fewer people dying per vehicle mile traveled, you know. So how can we get to that same kind of thing with guns?
Doctor, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate the time.
Sure. You're welcome. Thank you.
Let's pick up on it here after a short pause, include you in on the mix, whether it's through a phone call or a text. Give me your one idea. Give me the number one idea you have that would put us in a greater position to prevent Columbines, Parklands, and other events that rivet the nation, that kill people, that take kids away, take parents away, and then we have the huge conversation about it, and not a bleeping thing happens. Not a thing changes. I hope it's more than just everybody locks in where they're at, because, of course, that's where we are in society right now. And it can't be also our idea often of perfect be the enemy of good. Because nobody's saying that we pass it and like that, nobody's ever going to get a shot again. We're gonna resolve every mental health issue. That can't be the bar. Because so few issues of this import are ever resolved off one change. But if you become czar of school safety, and you can do one thing to give kids the best possible chance to just be kids and parents to be safe and others to be safe, what is it? What's your one idea you do? 48 past one, that is the Lindis Construction Time Check. Time to lower your energy bills with a free home energy audit. Let's go with phone calls and texts. 651-989-9226 or text away 81807. All right, here's my number one idea, and it goes back to a conversation that we had 2 days ago when this report came out about the data involving mental health in kids. 49% of kids who need treatment for mental health don't get it. That's one of the most pathetic stats we have in our country. Okay, that doesn't mean guns aren't a part of this, okay, because they are. And I'm not trying to take anybody's gun from protecting themselves. I'm not trying to prevent you from hunting. But this idea, of course, well, it's the Second Amendment. We can't touch anything. Yeah, we review and we adjust all the time. But I'm still going to go back to mental health, because we just talk a big game in this country and say, we really should do this. And we do some things, right? But we don't do enough. Because we still look at mental health so different than an actual other injury or an illness that you can capture differently. And again, this isn't going to stop everything. But the global impact on more doctors available, kids' confidence in reaching out to people, police having a better idea when they approach someone for a mental health condition, teachers' awareness, parents' greater awareness. First of all, for the global good of the country, and let's just go with the globe, in all countries, it should be better. But the overall reach with kids and their comfort with themselves and their feeling that they can speak out. So, yeah, if I had to pick one, it would be an enormous influx of awareness, money, doctors, treatment on mental health. That doesn't mean I'm slighting guns whatsoever, because I've talked about that a number of times before. Amy is in Minneapolis. I'm going to do a lot of your texts here. Go ahead, Amy.
Hi. My idea of stopping school shootings is nothing new. It's stopping the gun-free zones, because although that doctor said many teachers would not want to shoot someone, there's many that would be willing to be trained. And to me, at any company or any place, if there's someone who wants to be trained and protect other people, I have a permit to carry. And if I worked in a school and I thought somebody was shooting kids in another room, I would not have a problem with shooting that person.
But you've never faced that drama. You've never faced that situation. I don't doubt where your mind is at and your willingness to help out. But all of a sudden that unfolds, and you've had training in a dry room compared to how it plays out. It's a totally different situation. And to say these shootings away from schools, that we only have shootings in gun-free zones, the data doesn't match up with that at all.
Well, when they know that they go in and no one else is going to have a gun, that's
so why are there shootings at places all over the country when people have guns then? I don't doubt that there can be some individuals who will back away. But, Amy, and I appreciate the phone call, we still have plenty of places in this country where it doesn't matter whatsoever, that the irrational person who's intent on evil or isn't logical at all doesn't think that way. Sometimes we try to affix what we would think of, and it doesn't match up with somebody who's that villainous. Let's call it violence instead of gun violence. As an owner that shuts me down immediately, we need to focus on mental health and identify kids who have problems sooner. Start with healthy parents, armed combat seasoned veterans, removal of assault rifles. I'm just reading a bunch of texts here. Homeschooling. I'd have armed guards and armed teachers throughout the school. Mental health professionals every school. Remove all pesticides. Armed security and use metal detectors. There are no guarantees. It's known that particular schools are armed with guns, that it would be a deterrent. Yeah, to some, but to many others, not at all.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.